Translation, since then, by the grace of the Almighty Vishnu, I travel everywhere without restriction, both in the transcendental world and in the three divisions of the material world. This is because I am fixed in unbroken devotional service of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are three divisions of the material spheres, namely the Urdhva Loka, topmost planets, Madhya Loka, midway planets, and Adho Loka, downward planets. Beyond the Urdhva Loka planets, that is to say, above the Brahma Loka, are the material coverings of the universes, and above that is the spiritual sky, which is unlimited in expansion, containing unlimited self-illuminated Vaikuntha planets, inhabited by God himself, along with his associates, who are all eternally liberated living entities. Sri Narada Muni could enter all these planets in both the material and spiritual spheres without restriction, as much as the Almighty Lord is free to move personally in any part of his creation. In the material world, the living beings are influenced by the three material modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. But Sri Narada Muni is transcendental to all these material modes, and thus he can travel everywhere unrestricted. He is a liberated spaceman. The causeless mercy of Lord Vishnu is unparalleled, and such mercy is perceived by the devotees only by the grace of the Lord. Therefore, the devotees never fall down, but the materialists, that is, the fruitive workers and the speculative philosophers, do fall down, being forced by their respective modes of nature. The rishis, as above mentioned, cannot enter into the transcendental world like Narada. This fact is disclosed in the Nrsimha Purana. Rishis like Marichi are authorities in fruitive work, and rishis like Sanaka and Sanatan are authorities in philosophical speculation. But Sri Narada Muni is the prime authority for transcendental devotional service of the Lord. All the great authorities in the devotional service of the Lord follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni in the order of the Narada Bhakti Sutra, and therefore all the devotees of the Lord are unhesitatingly qualified to enter into the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha. Amagyana tremendasya gyananjana shakya chakshu militamina tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto him. Namo om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstai Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swaminita Namine. Namo om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstai Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashkacha Deshtarne. Vakam karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurundina taranam. Srinvatas shradayanityam grinitas chashvacheshtikam kalinanata dirgana bhagavan vishate kridi. Persons who regularly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and who are always taking the matter very seriously shall have the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested within their hearts within a very short time. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. When will Srila Rupa Goswami, who has established the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter at his lotus feet? Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godadaya Prishpanvanto Chitro Shando Tamonado. I offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have arisen simultaneously over the horizon of Gaudadesh, just like the sun and the moon, to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Antarbhish chalokam strind parayam yaskandita vritaha anugrahan mahavishnu avigata gati kvachit. Since then, by the grace of the Almighty Vishnu, I travel everywhere without restriction, both in the transcendental world and in the three divisions of the material world. This is because I am fixed in unbroken devotional service of the Lord. So, I'd like to just ask everyone for their mercy and their attention so that I can speak something relevant and be able to share whatever realizations I have on this verse. First, I'd just like to mention one point. This is just a kind of almost like a disclaimer. In the purport, there's this word, this term, causeless mercy of Lord Vishnu. And I've seen this interpreted as meaning that Krishna's mercy can be almost whimsical or not even rational. It's capricious, kind of very whimsical, that there's no real cause for it. It's just Krishna's just chosen it. And I think this is a very misunderstood term, because Krishna is rational and the universe is rational, and there are always good reasons why Krishna acts the way he acts. So it's not that someone who doesn't deserve the mercy gets the mercy, and someone who does deserve the mercy doesn't get the mercy. That's not Krishna's modus operandi, as far as I understand it. So you can challenge that when it comes to questions at the end. So the first kind of entry point for me in this verse is that Narada Muni is unrestricted, as it states here, the liberated spaceman. So what is it that restricts us? Why is it that Narada Muni is unrestricted, and that, you know, what's the divide between the state of being unrestricted and the state of being restricted? It seems to me that really the issue is attachment. That when someone is attached to something material, then that's what starts to cause the restriction in that person's consciousness. And Narada Muni is unrestricted because his only attachment is Krishna. So there's that verse that comes earlier in this chapter, Sakrit Yad Darshitam Rupam Etad Kama Etenaka Mat Kama Shanake Sadhu Sarva Munchati Khrich Chayan, where Narada Muni, it's been described by other devotees in classes before me, how Narada Muni sat down to meditate, and his meditation was so fixed and so focused that the Lord appeared before him, but only very briefly. And so Narada Muni returned to his meditation to try and regain that darshan, but he wasn't able to do it. And he was so putting so much determination into it. He was desperate to regain that darshan, but it wasn't happening. And then the voice came, which spoke this verse that I just recited. And Krishna said to Narada Muni that, you've only once seen my form, and you will only once see this form in this life. Sakrit Yad Darshitam Rupam, this form, darshan of this form. And this word kama, kamayate, kama means lust or hankering. And Krishna says, and I've only just briefly shown you this form so that you will hanker to see me again. Because the more you hanker to see me, the less you will hanker after the material things. So there it is. It's like an inversely proportional thing, that if you hanker for material things, then you can't be hankering for Krishna. And if you're hankering for Krishna, then it displaces the hankering for the material things. And we see different devotees in the scripture have trouble with attachment, because the attachment can be for something like prestige. It can be just for plain old money and wealth. And it can be attachment for family members and relationships. But ultimately, all attachments have to be given up for Krishna. Krishna must be the overarching, supreme attachment for the devotee. It's not to say that it's so, you know, such a tunneled vision thing that you renounce everything. Sometimes devotees oversimplify the meaning of the philosophy. And for instance, they'll just give up their families and not talk to them again because they're karmis, and I'm just only going to be attached to Krishna. I'm not going to allow my senses to sort of think of anything else or look at anything else or do anything else. I remember there was one devotee at Soho Street, and he had to have this picture of Krishna, and he would chant with the picture of Krishna in front of him like this, just so that he couldn't see anything else and look at anything else. So, but devotees have trouble with attachment, and even great devotees have trouble with attachment. Arjuna, for instance, you know, he was attached to his family members. He didn't want to just fight the battle, even though Krishna decided it, and then the Bhagavad Gita had to be spoken. And Arjuna was totally traumatized by the whole attachment. You know, his body was trembling, his Gandiva was slipping from his hand, and so on. And we saw also Yudhisthira attached to his, in a sense, his status as a person who's never not told the truth. And when Krishna asked him to lie, he hesitated. He balked at the idea of giving up his reputation. And the classic example of someone who had, in the Mahabharata, who had attachment to his prestige is Bhishma. Because in the course of the Mahabharata, we saw how there was a period where there was no king, and Bhishma he stole those three ladies in order for there to be wives for, who was it? Vichitravirya, yeah. And Vichitravirya died. So Satyavati, the mother of Bhishma, she was saying to him, well, you have to marry these girls so that we can have a king. But Bhishma, of course, had taken that terrible vow of celibacy. And he was the sort of person that, you know, when I take a vow, nothing's going to break my vow. And he was saying to her that, you know, I don't care if the world goes to hell, if everything is destroyed, I'm not going to break my vow. And so he had this nature of being so staunch. But if Krishna is wanting a different arrangement, then we should give up whatever vow we've taken, whatever it is. if Krishna desires it, because what could be more important than Krishna's desire? You know, our vow may be in the service of a good or of an even higher good, but Krishna is the ultimate good. So we should give up the good for the higher good, and we should give up the higher good for the ultimate good. But Bhishma wasn't doing that. And so it had to come to a point where in the battle, Krishna broke his vow to show Bhima that there are things more important than just your word of honor and your vow. Because Krishna had promised not to fight in the battle. And Bhishma, he made a vow that he would, one of these arrows would kill one of the Pandavas. And he had Arjuna at his mercy. And he was about to kill him when Krishna broke his vow to save Arjuna. So, so Bhishma saw that example, and that was the transition for Bhishma. That's when there was a transition or a transformation in the heart of Bhishma. So this attachment is, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, Indriyas indriyas yarte raga dvesha vivastito tayor vasham naga chet tohyasya paripantino. It's saying that there are principles to regulate attachment and aversion. These are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So there are principles to regulate them. Not all of us can just give up our attachments and give up our aversions on the spot. But there are principles to help us move through the different stages where we can ultimately give something up, or where we can ultimately embrace something that we normally wouldn't do. There was one pastime where Dhruva was fighting with the Yakshas in... He was wanting to teach them a lesson because one of them killed his stepbrother. And in that fight with the Yakshas, Dhruva actually got carried away. And he was just killing them like wholesale. And was it Svayambhuva Manu came to speak to him and said to him that... You've got to give this up. You know, you've just become, you've sort of lost perspective. Your anger is controlling you. And he said very in a, yeah, it was Svayambhuva Manu said to him that this anger, this attachment, is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. Because, and he said that if you listen to me, what I say to you will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. So I've always liked that phrasing there. If you listen to me, he said, I wish you all good fortune, and if you listen to me, what I say will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. And so Dhruva was able to let go. So we see the example of all great Vaishnavas that they're able to do this. They're able to let go. This is like the higher form of renunciation. To give up material things is a lower form, but to give up the subtle anattas and the subtle attachments, to let go of those, that's like a higher level of surrender. Now, just to kind of balance this point about attachment, sometimes attachment serves a very positive purpose. So, attachment has to be given up at the right time, not at the wrong time. For instance, when two devotees get married, they're meant to be attached to each other. That's meant to happen. It's not that there's a sort of, they act like they're attached, but they're actually detached. There's meant to be an attachment. When the child comes, there's meant to be an attachment there. It has to be real. And if it isn't, that's actually a misunderstanding of how attachment works. When the stage comes, there's a certain stage that will naturally evolve. When that natural stage comes, that's the time when we become detached. So in the Vedic system, from the age of 50, that serious process of beginning detachment starts to happen. And then the man at 75 is meant to take sannyas, and the full attachment comes into bloom. It's not meant to happen prematurely. So, when it's talking about Narada Muni being able to travel in any sphere, whether material or spiritual, I just was thinking how when someone is self-realized, they can maintain their consciousness, Krishna consciousness, in any circumstances. And that's why Narada Muni can travel in whether the material or spiritual spheres, he can travel anywhere and remain Narada Muni, uncompromised and pure. There was one example in the Bible of a person who could do this as well, and his name was Joseph. And he was given this coat of many colors. I don't know if any of you have heard of this story, but he was given this coat of many colors, and the coat of many colors represented his ability to remain transcendental in all times and circumstances. So he was one of many brothers, and because he was so special, his father favored him. And as a result of that, the other brothers were envious, and they plotted to kill him. And they were about to kill him when one of the brothers thought, "Better. Why don't we just? I've got a better idea. Why don't we sell him into slavery and just make ourselves some money?" So they gave up the idea of killing him and they sold him into slavery. But because Joseph could always remain transcendental, even though he was sold into slavery to the king of Egypt, he remained just in his very joyful disposition. And the king was very attracted to that. So in spite, he had every reason to be resentful, because when family members betray you, that's an intense thing to go through. And very few can survive that. That can actually reconfigure your whole faith in human nature, can destroy your faith in human nature. But it didn't with Joseph, because he had a connection to God. And so he was happy as one of the brothers living in the household of his father, and he was happy as a slave of the king of Egypt. So the king of Egypt became attracted to him. He's got such a nice energy. So he brought him in closer to him. And as he brought him in closer to him, the king's queen also became attracted to him. But she became attracted in a lustful way. So she tried to seduce him. But because Joseph understood right from wrong, and because of his loyalty to the king, he refused her approach. And then at one point, she just lost control and she just started to grab his clothes. And he just ran, but she held on to some part of his clothes. And because she was so angry, then she came to the king and said, "Joseph tried to rape me. And look, I've got a piece of his clothing here just to show how, you know, he was undressing himself before me." And then the king threw him into the jail. So did Joseph get upset and resentful? No, he didn't. He maintained his cheerfulness and his optimism. And he didn't lose his faith in Krishna. Because many people would think, Why is Krishna doing this to me? You know, we have the verse Tatenukam Pamsu Samikshamano. A real devotee will have that faith in Krishna no matter what happens to them. They know that Krishna is all good. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauri Nitai Ki Jai. And Joseph he's in the jail, he's happy again, and the jailer starts to like him and starts to think he's a really nice guy and gets to know him and then gets to find out that Joseph is a really good astrologer. And the jailer is in communication with the king, and he just happens to tell the king that this slave that you threw into the jail, he's a great astrologer. And the king thought, oh, well, let's see how good he is. Bring him to me. And so the king asked him to do the astrology for himself and for Egypt, and he gave such a enlivening and enlightening astrology that the king took it seriously. And I don't want to get too much into this story, but the king, the astrology was that Egypt would go through 7 years of prosperity and then it would go through 7 years of devastating drought. Not only Egypt, but the whole area, but including Egypt. And the king took it seriously. And he asked Joseph, what should we do with this forecast? Joseph said, you must, in your 7 years of prosperity, you must save grain so that you can survive through the 7 years of devastating drought. And so the king implemented that and made Joseph his prime minister. And so the irony of this story is that when the drought hit, all the neighboring countries would come begging for some grain because they knew Egypt is the only one that's got, you know, so much storage of grain. And included among those people who would come to the king for begging grain were Joseph's brothers who had tried to kill him. And they didn't recognize who Joseph was because, you know, he's now a prime minister and he's looking so, such a sort of eminent personality. But he recognized them and he tested their character to see if their character had evolved, if they'd stopped being so malevolent and miserly. And he discovered that they had. They had evolved their characters and they were remorseful for how they'd treated him. And then he forgave them. And there was a reunion. So, this is what allows Narada Muni to also, you know, there was an occasion where, because Narada Muni is always trying to give Krishna consciousness to whoever he meets. And there was one occasion where the Prajapati Daksha, who's always trying to, you know, increase the population and have more and more children, he had this one group of children, I think it was 10,000 of them, they were called the Hariashvas. And Narada Muni spoke to them and explained to them the futility of material life. They took it on board and they all just took sannyas and said, forget this procreation business. We're just going to stay brahmachari and go back to Godhead. And Daksha was furious. And so he had some more children who were called the Savalashvas. And Narada Muni did the same to them. The phrase he kept repeating to them was, Kima Sat Karma Bibhavet. What is the point of impermanent material activities? What's the point of it? You're eternal. These material activities are temporary. And so the Savalashvas took it on board and they also followed in the footsteps of their elder brothers. And when the second lot of children were liberated by Narada Muni, he kind of stormed up to Narada Muni and started shouting and abusing and criticizing him and calling him names and cursing him. But Narada Muni did not say anything back to him. He stayed humble. And in fact, it's explained in the purport that he appreciated that Daksha is an exalted personality, and he just allowed himself to, he stayed there and allowed Daksha to get it all out of his system, to get it all off his chest. Because when you repress things, it's not healthy spiritually. You know, when you can externalize it and actually look at it, then you can start to become purified of things. When you become conscious of your own anattas, then you can start to purify them. If you're not conscious of them, how can you purify yourself of them? If you stay, you know, repressing things too long, eventually there's going to be a critical mass, there's going to be a tilt, and all of a sudden there's a whole disaster going on in terms of bewilderment. So I've got a couple more points to make, but today is also the... Actually, I'll just finish there and ask if there's any comments or questions. Because the reason I'm just going to finish early is because today is the anniversary of Prabhupada landing in Boston. And so that was a momentous occasion, and I'd like to read the translation... read the translation of Markin Bhagavad Dharma, which is a poem that Prabhupada wrote on the Jaladuta just before landing at Boston Pier. So I'd like to read that, and I'd like to ask Govinda to sing the song as well. So, Jai Krishna, your question? Yeah. 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 What I'm getting at with Bhishma is that he had a dogmatic mindset. So that's the point. That no matter what. No matter what consequence was going to come, he was not going to break his vow. It didn't matter. It was like he was blind to any possibility that something could be higher than his vow. That's the fault of his mentality, that there's no possibility that there could be anything higher than my vow. So there's always that possibility that something's higher than my whatever. So that was the problem with Bhishma. Yes, Adam?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. We can basically say the same thing about Arjuna, in terms of the whoever asked the Gandiva bow for me, I will kill him. So when Yudhishthira asked, okay, you should let go of Gandiva bow, Arjuna was like, okay, now's the time I'm going to kill you. And because Bhishma Dev, as a Mahajan, he didn't have directly association with Krishna, and in that other situation, Krishna basically resolved the difficulty between Yudhishthira and Arjuna.
So you're pointing out that that's a similar case,
yeah,
where
so
Arjuna made
case?
That vow, and he was going to kill Yudhishthira.
So if Krishna wouldn't be there, there would probably be different Mahabharata. Something else will happen.
Again, dogmatic mindset. Yeah. And the classic example of this is the story where the sage had made a vow of telling the truth, and then the innocent family were being chased by the dacoits, and they ran past his hermitage and were hiding, and the dacoits came and asked him, "Did you see a family run by?" And he said, "Yeah." "Did you see where they went?" And he said, "Yeah." Because he couldn't tell a lie. He'd made this vow. And he said, "Where did they go?" And he said, "Over there." And the dacoit says, "Thanks." and went and killed them and robbed them. And so, again, the dogmatic mindset, it's not, you know, a devotee is meant to be, you know, that is actually material consciousness. A devotee is meant to always be in spiritual consciousness and therefore always asking, what does Krishna want of me in this situation? So thank you all very much for your attention. And I'm going to read this translation now. There's the day before Prabhupada caught that ship, he went to Mayapur, and from Mayapur he went to Shantipur and Advaita Bhavan. And he was regularly, as a householder, going to the house of Advaita Acharya to pray to Advaita Acharya. And that place was where Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya would gather together and discuss Sankirtan. And he would go there in order to get his inspiration. And often he would be there crying, just in his expressing his earnest desire to somehow be able to fulfill his spiritual master's mission. He would go to this place, and the pujari would note him. If everyone would like, they can look up this Prabhupada memory on YouTube by Mula Prakriti, where she describes this, that Prabhupada would sit at the back of this temple room, and the pujari would see this householder there coming regularly, sometimes spending hours and hours just chanting in earnest, and Prabhupada would often be tearful and crying. And then he said that one time he saw this person sit in the same place where this householder would sit, but this time this person was wearing sannyas robes, and he had to look twice to understand that it's the same person. So he came up to him and he said to him, who are you? You know, you've been coming, you remember me. I would always give you a little bit of Mahaprasadam before you'd leave as a householder, but now you're taking sannyas, so what is happening and who are you? And then Prabhupada would tell him that, you know, my name is Abhacharan Arvindam Bhaktivedanta Swami. And he said that Prabhupada said to him, to this pujari, that I've taken a terrible vow. My spiritual master has given me a terrible instruction to go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness, and I'm leaving tomorrow. So would you please give me your blessings? And the pujari naturally gave, he said, if any blessings I have, I'd give you. And he said he didn't see him again. But then about many, many years later, he suddenly started noticing these Western Vaishnavas coming to his temple room. And he was curious, wondering why is this all of a sudden happening? And he said that this pujari said that he would always remember Prabhupada and wonder whatever happened to him. And then one day this Western Vaishnav gave him a Back to Godhead magazine, and he saw Prabhupada's picture in it. And he realized, yes, you know, my friend has succeeded. He's triumphed. He's done what his spiritual master asked him to do. So this is Prabhupada speaking on the writing this poem on the Jaladutta. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here, otherwise why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion, absorbed in material life. They think themselves happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. But I know your causeless mercy can make everything possible, because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation, and if a sober person repeatedly receives the message of Srimad Bhagavatam with submissive oral reception, then they will be able to understand your message. They will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, most unqualified, and most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do it on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it's up to you to make me a success or failure, as you like. O spiritual master of the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel engladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. Make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have a strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.